Now, when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, but Mary remained seated in the house. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world." When she had said this, she went and called her sister Mary, saying in private, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." And when she heard it, she rose quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who were with her in the house consoling her saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. Now when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, by this time there will be an odour, for he has been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And Jesus lifted his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The man who had died came out, his hands and feet bound with linen strips, and his face wrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go."
Well, thank you very much, Claire. And if you could please keep that passage handy in front of you, that should hopefully help you. And you'll see there's a little outline, which is on the inside as well. Well, suffering is everywhere, isn't it? We try to avoid it. We try to avoid thinking about it. But sometimes we just can't, can we? On the 12th of January 2010, at around 5 p.m, Haiti was hit by a huge earthquake. Just 45 seconds and 35 times more powerful than the Hiroshima bomb. Then 15 minutes later, devastation. Complete devastation, as the National Palace, the cathedral, countless homes were completely demolished. And then night fell, and people searching by torchlight to find loved ones in the darkness. 300,000 people dead. 1 million orphans out of a population of 10 million. And then the violence started. People desperate for food and water and medical care. Looters armed with machetes. Even a thief alleged to have shot someone who was killed by an angry mob as they put a burning tire around his neck. How can God allow this? Suffering is everywhere, isn't it? The 2004 Boxing Day tsunami in the Indian Ocean, another 300,000 people dead. The Syria civil war, some estimates are now saying 470,000 people or so dead. And it's the same as we look back in history, isn't it? The last century, the bloodiest on record. 100 million people killed apart from war. Auschwitz and the camps with that misleading sign, hideous, Arbeit macht frei, work makes you free. The camps where some of my grandmother's family were sent, 10 years ago or so, I was on holiday in Cambodia. And if you're looking for a holiday destination, it's an amazingly beautiful country. But we saw the killing fields as well. And we saw the pits where the bodies were put, the mass graves. And we saw the tree where people were bashed, children were bashed to death against it. And it was just so surreal, this beautiful place, this beautiful country with all these butterflies flying around. And yet a place of horror and carnage. How can God allow this? Stephen Fry said, it's not right, it's utterly, utterly evil. Sometimes the question is asked like this by people. If God is all-powerful, surely he could have stopped it. If he's all-loving, surely he would have wanted to stop it. So either he's not all-loving, or he's not all-powerful, or maybe he's not either. Either he's a God who cares, or he's a God who can, or maybe he's not either. And maybe he doesn't exist at all. Maybe that's a question you've asked, or maybe it's a question someone else has asked you, and you've puzzled over how you're to answer it, maybe. Well, in this series, we're considering some of the big questions of life. And this is one of the most troubling questions, intellectually speaking, that we have. It's not easy, is it? And it's so troubling that many of us maybe have come to a point where we have doubts. Maybe some of us even doubt whether God exists at all. But we know that this isn't just an intellectual question for us. And if it is, it certainly won't be just an intellectual question for very long. It's deeply personal. The pain of suffering touches us, and it brings tears. And then it's not just the doubts in my mind, but it's the pain in my heart. It touches us. Suffering touches us deeply, all of us. Or it will. When someone we care about dies. When the relationship ends or it never really gets started. When we lose our job. When the results come in and the doctor says that terrible word, the C word, cancer. It is one of the big questions of life, isn't it? And it is true whether we'd call ourselves Christians or atheists or something else. It is a question that we grapple with. And it's not easy. And I don't claim to have all the answers. And I certainly don't claim to have a knockdown answer. I'm going to try not to be glib. And apologies if I don't succeed in that, if I get this wrong. But I'm going to try my best. But suffering, it is everywhere, isn't it? And therefore, it's not very surprising that it is in the Bible as well. In fact, in quite a lot of the books of the Bible. And the Bible, I think, gives us something towards an answer. In fact, it gives us answers for the mind and the heart. And especially Jesus. Jesus has something to say about this whole topic. We can't look at everything that he says. But we can make a start. We can do that. So we can make a step towards an answer. And I hope you'll listen in as we do that right now. And the big thing I think I want us to see from this passage is this. In the face of suffering, Jesus is the one who cares and the one who can. He's the one who cares and the one who can. He cares about suffering. He can do something about suffering, ultimately. First of all, then, the one who cares. Once again, we're with John. He is an eyewitness of Jesus' life. And he's viewed him close at hand for 3 years. And he's seen what he said, what he did. And here he tells this story. And here's what happens. The news arrives. And it's bad news. Lazarus is sick. He is ill. And it's not just some bloke. This is a real person. We're told his name. We're told his sister's name. So we're told where he's from. It's not just a nice story. He is a real person. But more than that, he is real to Jesus. he means something to Jesus. We're not just told that Lazarus is sick or ill. We are told, verse 3, take a look at verse 3 with me. Pick up this the sheet, if you would. We'll see there in verse 3 that it is the one whom you love who is ill. And then again in verse 5. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. And then in verse 7, it says there, he describes him as friend as we go on. It's a sense of someone who's close, a close friend, a much loved friend. And then over the page in verse 36, let me read that for us. So the Jews said, see how he loved him. Do you see that? People are now saying it aloud. They can tell he loves him. He cares. Jesus cares about this man. And he is sick. He is ill. And it's not just the sniffles. This is the kind of illness that can snuff him out. That is going to snuff him out. You don't announce in this kind of way, in this kind of dramatic way, that someone is sick if it's just man flu. And I know some of us blokes maybe do kind of announce it a bit. But this is the kind of thing that where you need to go and dial 999 or go to A&E to get it sorted out. And soon the scene changes. It's no longer the sick bed, it is the death bed. It becomes very somber. It's a real tragedy. Verse 11, Jesus says that he's fallen asleep. And they misunderstand and they think he's just talking about having a power nap. But actually, he tells them straight, he has died. There's nothing more the doctors can do. Cut down in the prime of his life, and no more legacy that he can build. He is gone. Well, how does Jesus respond to that? Well, he doesn't just offer platitudes, and he doesn't just pretend everything's all right. He doesn't just put a brave face on it. He grieves. That's what he does. Take a look at verse 33. It tells us there that he is deeply moved in his spirit. Now that is the word that is used elsewhere for animals snorting. It can mean that he's angry. It is as if Jesus is angry. He is angry at death. He cares, you see. And verse 33 says that he is troubled. He's in inner turmoil. And then verse 35. He weeps. He bursts into tears. This is grief. This is Jesus full of grief. The whole emotional range associated with grief, because he really cares. He shows, you see, what it looks like to be fully God and yet fully human. His emotions, they're not like us. He's never out of control. He's never kind of emotionally up and down in an out of control way. He never kind of loses it emotionally in the way that we do. But this here is real deep grief. He cares, you see. More than that, he looks death in the face and he sees that death has a face. And it is his friend. It is Lazarus. And he's angry. He's angry at death. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. Francis Bacon called death a friend. But it's not true, is it? Death's taken away his friend. He's angry at it, therefore. And so he's not disinterested. He's not distant. He cares. God's Son cares. And I think it makes a huge difference to know that, especially in the face of suffering. But if that was all, I don't think it would offer us much hope. Because what Jesus says and does proves not only that he cares, but that he can. So secondly, the one who can. Jesus hears that his mate is ill. And then he does something that seems a little bit weird. Take a look at verse 6. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Literally, when therefore he heard, when he hears, he stays. This is really odd. Verse 5 tells us he loves Lazarus, and therefore, because of that, he waits 2 days. He doesn't hurry to his bedside. Instead, he slows down and he waits. He waits until he's actually died. He waits until it's too late to go and visit his friend. Now, that doesn't seem normal, does it? It's like hearing that your friend is terminally ill and then instead going shopping or to the cinema instead. And it is shocking. Even more shocking, verse 15, he says that he's glad he wasn't there. What's going on? How can it be loving to let your friend die? How can it be caring to let your mate die? Well, it is this, I think. He cares enough to show that he can do something not just about sickness, but death itself. He's angry enough at death to stop it dead. Dead in its tracks. 4 days later, he gets to the cemetery and he comes to pay his respects. And then he seems to throw all respect right out of the window as he says, "Open the tomb." It's pretty shocking. I don't know whether you watch crime dramas or CSI or anything like that, but when they exhume bodies, they always put this kind of tent over the top in the movies, don't they? Because it's such a shocking thing to pull a body out. Well, verse 39, take a look at that. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, by this time there will be an odour, for he has been dead 4 days." John wants us to really understand, and he kind of lays it on with a trowel, so we realise, Martha, the sister of the dead man, you know, the dead man, your friend. You want to do what? You want to open it up after 4 days? They're not medics. They don't know the science. They maybe don't know about enzymes. They don't maybe know about that kind of science. But they do know about the smell. They do know about death. And they do know after 4 days that decomposition will have started, that the body will be rotting. And yet, amazingly, they trust him and they do what he says. And they roll aside the stone. And Jesus speaks. He speaks so that they hear it. He speaks to his heavenly Father. And he says this. So they took away the stone. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me. But I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me." He speaks then, after speaking to his father, and he speaks to Lazarus, and he says, "Lazarus, come out." He speaks to him, and it all happens so fast. There's not enough time for Lazarus to even take off the bandages as he comes out. It's not as if he was kind of sitting there and it was some kind of cruel joke and he was ready to kind of jump out. No, it's nothing like that. Jesus raises him to life, and it is astonishing. Jesus shows that he cares. How? By showing that he can. He shows that he can deal death a death blow. According to the statistics, 10,000 people a week die in the UK, and so somewhere today there is a funeral. Now, I've been to family funerals, my grandparents, my uncle, my mother. And I remember those funerals. I remember the speeches. I remember the flowers and the smell. I remember the coffin. I remember all of that. I remember the grief. And in times like that, I'm reminded of this passage, and particularly the words of verse 25. Jesus says to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? Jesus offers life because he is life. And therefore he can offer life to others. If we've trusted in him, he offers us life. And there is therefore a sense, according to these verses, that we will never die. Life that starts now, but continues forever. And Lazarus is a picture of that for us. At the end of John's Gospel, there is another death, a much worse death, Jesus' death, and an even more dramatic resurrection. Jesus himself, Jesus who lays aside the cloths and is risen bodily, physically, with a new kind of body. And all of this, verse 4, reveals to us who he is. It reveals his glory. It shows us who he is. It shows us who he is so that we can trust him. And that, I don't know whether you noticed, that is the purpose of this. Verse 15, so that you may believe. Same in verse 42, that they may believe. Now, believing is not, believing in wishful thinking or in make-believe. It is believing, it is trusting in this person, the one who can deal with death. It's trusting in the only one who offers any hope whatsoever, the one who cares and the one who can. The one who offers life, the other side of death, because he himself came through the other side of death. Who gives us hope of a new future with a new body that doesn't suffer and die. In a new world where there is no suffering, where there is no death. What we sometimes call heaven. Now I know that that is not a complete answer. And we still feel the loss of family members. I feel that too. But I think it is the best answer. And actually, there are alternative answers, but we need to compare them, because when we do that, I think we see that it is the best answer. Let's consider the alternative answers just for a moment, just to see that. Now, I'm going to describe these in fairly simplistic terms. We haven't got time to talk about all of this, so feel free to come back and ask me questions afterwards. But first of all, there is secularism. Secularist materialism says it is all meaningless. We're just DNA. And as Dawkins puts it, DNA neither knows nor cares. DNA, it just is. And we dance to its music. In this view, in secularism, you can't even ask the question. You can't even ask why. Because it has no meaning. You can only do this. All you can do is avoid it or try to fix it. Avoid it by trying to stay healthy, by trying to avoid thinking about it, by having a good time in life now. But that's all you can do. Or you can try and fix it, go to the doctors. But there's no caring in this viewpoint, because it doesn't make any sense, because it's all meaningless. It's just a chemical reaction. Then there is the self-transcendent view. Buddhism says that suffering is an illusion. It's not real. We need to detach ourselves from this world because our problem is that we care too much. You can ask the question, but the best thing is not to care too much, to detach ourselves from this world. And that's the answer that that gives. Or finally, then there is moralism. Hinduism says suffering is karma, as I understand it. It's payback. It's your fault. Or it's someone else's. And all you can do in that context is try your best to be good. And hope that next time around there is less payback. In the meantime, though, you just have to pay for it. And you can't do anything about it. But actually, finally, there is fatalism. Islam says that it's just Allah's will. Or the British stiff upper lip says, you just have to grin and bear it. You just have to live with it. It's your destiny. You have to submit to it. You have to endure it. You have to live with it. But there's no There's no answer beyond that. You can't do anything about it. Well, in the context of all of these, in the face of all of these different alternatives, Jesus, he is unique. He is totally different. He cares about these things, and he can do something ultimately about it. Well, where does that leave us? Where does that leave us with this big question? Well, I think it offers us hope. Hope in the middle of suffering. And maybe that's something you're going through right now. So when our minds doubt and when our hearts hurt, we don't need to just try and avoid it or fix it or just pay for it or just pretend or just endure it and live with it. Instead, we can look to Jesus, the one who died for people like us, the one who rose again, the one who has conquered death. The one who offers us life. Life that starts now and goes on forever. And one day we'll give all of his people a new body and a new world where there will be no more suffering ever again. And so he speaks to our doubting minds and our heavy hearts. And he says to us, trust me. Trust me. In fact, I think that's why this story is there. So that we see that we can trust him. Well, will we do that? Will we trust him or keep on doing so? Or maybe we're not quite ready to do that. Maybe we still have lots of questions about this issue or a whole host of other issues. Well, what do we do then? Well, will we at least look into him some more? Here are some ways you might be able to do that. If you can take this sheet with the passage on it, and if you turn over, you'll see there's a little box there on the back. And there you'll see that the last bullet says, Christianity Explored. That is a course that we run from time to time, that many have done. It's a way that you can ask some of those questions and maybe find some answers. Well, do consider signing up for that if you'd like to. Or maybe you'd like to come back next week and in the week after as we look at some more big questions. Or maybe you'd like to take away an account of Jesus' life. There's a few of these, John's Gospel at the back, the account that we've just been looking at together. Maybe you might want to take one of these away as a gift from us and read it and consider things for yourself.